back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Happy New Year to everybody out there. Happy Festivus. We are getting ready for some serious football around here. And if you're tuning in to AM 1570, hearing wall-to-wall football and wall-to-wall out-of-town people, I know we have a lot of, believe it or not, all these years in, 25 years into the station, 32 years into my career, now in my 33rd year, we still have new people finding us. And I have recurring theme guests that have not been on in the football world. I mean, little-known secret, Chad Steele threw me out, but I got a lot of friends in football and people that vote on Hall of Fame names and Super Bowl champions and friends I've met through the media. This is one of my favorite people. He's up in Philadelphia. One of my favorite people, not just because he was a teacher, like Luke Jones was a teacher here and in certain ways, but he was Joe Flacco's algebra teacher and also a football insider. He is the run-and-shoot gangster. I should have worn my Warren Moon jersey. I'll bust that in. But I'm a little cranky about the Titans wearing the Oilers gear, and I'm kind of glad Vrabel got fired for wearing that hat. Mike Tenier joins us now from the fighting city of Philadelphia, on the other side, on the Jersey side, where Flacco would tell me they're tougher over in Audubon and Haddon Heights. How are you? I mean, you must be having fun with this. There is a part of you that probably really loves Joe Flacco, or at least likes him a lot as a neighbor.
There's a part of everyone in my community who loves Joe Flacco and has always loved Joe Flacco. By the way, I was his calculus teacher. By saying algebra teacher, you short sell Joe and you short sell me because it was a calculus class. And
also, I don't even know how to say that. I didn't make it through algebra. I really thought it was algebra. So tell our audience, because it is a good come on. I mean, you know a lot about football, and we'll get to all of that. You do football for a living these days, and I've given up the math teaching, but I did think it was algebra. So I've already pissed away the story. I've already messed up the story. So I want you to get the story right as a journalist.
It was calculus. It's also Audubon, not Audubon, but that might have been a little bomber. You might have been speaking bomber to me. I recognize that. And we are tougher here on the South Jersey side than in Philly. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. But I'll tell you what, you know, as Joe Flacco's career with the Ravens, those later seasons, and he sort of became this, hey, is Joe Flacco elite? And that became this little joke and this punchline, and they had some weaker seasons. Even people here in South Jersey started to be like, you know, whatever, we're the favorite son, the neighborhood hero, whatever. That kind of fell by the wayside a little bit. There was even some sort of sour grapes criticism of Joe Flacco here in the community. We don't get that anymore. This comeback has been a wonderful thing, a wonderful reminder, not just for football fans, for this community here around Audubon and Haddonfield, Haddon Heights, Cherry Hill, Collingswood, that this was a special individual that still lives among us, is still here, and a special football player as well, that we should appreciate all the things that he has done.
Well, you can, I've been to your community. I wrote chapter 8 of my book in Purple Rain 2 about not just the regular Joe. I went up, I spent a day and a half with Joe, driving around, having iced tea. His cousins were coming into the bar. This is 3 weeks after he won the Super Bowl. This is in February, you know, and I got to say, you know, and I knew Joe pretty well before then, and he and I talked back in the summer, and he told me he still wanted to play, and I sort of said, did you see yourself last year? You looked a little slow, Joe. You know what I mean? And I don't know what he's been doing the last couple of months, but do you have any relationship, or have you run into him in the bakery at some point in the last year or two? I mean, give me a little primer, but also, who was the kid you met? Like, tell me the day you met Joe Flacco. Is he in 10th grade? Is he pockmarked? Is he 5'8"? Because he had a growth spurt, apparently, at some point. I don't know if you knew him when he was shorter.
I see him at parades in the neighborhood. It's like, hey, and that's about what we do. I talk to his brothers sometimes. I see them socially going around because he has like 500 brothers.
He's got a bunch of them. I was going to say.
And his sister. And I taught many of them as well, a chunk of them, and know them as well. But the kid I knew was already 6 foot, he was taller than me by the time I met him. I did not know the freshman or sophomore Joe Flacco. He comes into my classroom, I believe, as a senior.
I don't think he took calculus as a freshman in high school.
You know? No.
I'm 55 and I still can't do calculus. So
I don't remember if I had started teaching right then, would have put it in his freshman, sophomore year. But I taught juniors and seniors. He was the first of the brothers I taught. I'm pretty sure he's the oldest. I think Mike is the second oldest. But you know, he was a phenomenal student. You know, he was in the class, and his wife was in the class as well. But like, the Audubon football team was like 5-4 that year. Like, he is already 6'5". He's already throwing the ball 60 yards downfield. Everybody else on the team is 5'8".
He told me that the team stunk. That was the lead of my profile of Joe Flacco in my book. The lead was we always stunk, but I loved playing because I got to play with the same kids I played with
It
growing
was
up. They
his
were the same, they were the neighborhood kids. He said we weren't very good, but we loved each other, and I was the big guy that could throw the ball, but we stunk, you know, and we were playing. And he also played, I'm trying to think, Brian, was it Brian McKinney? No, it was, there was a
Brian McKinney
lineman.
played in Woodbury.
Woodbury, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was Brian McKinney who grew up, and they played against each other's schools, right?
Yes, they played against each other's school. McKinney was in the marching band, I think, his first year or two. I think he moved over when he had his growth spurt. But they played against each other. And Flacco did play on defense sometimes. He sometimes played safety. But yeah, it was all of his buddies. I'm not going to name drop all these guys. I might get the names wrong, I say 20 years later. But they ran the T formation. It was Coach Deal, I think his name was. And the offense was like a T formation to be like, running off tackle and running in the middle with three backs in the backfield and two ends. And they had to modify it a little bit for Flacco to put some bombs in there because for I don't know how many years at Audubon High School, there was nobody who was going to get the ball more than 20 yards down the field on a floater. And suddenly he's got this guy who can launch it 50, 60 yards. So it's like, okay, T formation, somebody go in motion wide so you can run the
All
bomb.
you need is one really fast kid at
Didn't have it.
that
Didn't have it. He had like a. Had like a sneaky quick hit or two, yeah.
Mike Denier is here. He is a run and shoot gangster, one-time calculus teacher to Joe Flacco. Next time I see Joe, I'm gonna apologize for saying algebra all these years. Dude, I reached to you because I love you. I haven't had you on. I haven't done as much football in season. I do a lot of Luke, and I didn't want to bother you. And then, you know, I figured I would chunk everybody into this time when the Ravens make the playoffs to get sort of big pick. And I like booked you on, and it took me until I got my cup of Royal Farms coffee here, my cold roofing mug, to say, "You taught Flacco." Like I completely spayed. I didn't even call you because of that.
Right.
And Lamar and the Ravens and your assessment of all of this. I mean, tell everybody what you do because I had Aaron Schatz on this week. You're in the nerdocracy of DVOA and analytics. That's really who you are. Taking your math skills. My father loved math, and my father would have loved to have been alive today with statistics. He loved all that stuff. I was an English guy. You know, I was verbal, not math. But for you with where Lamar is and what this season has represented. I had Aaron on already talking about all this sort of record-setting, unprecedented, never been seen before kind of team that had leads in every game, leads at the two-minute warning, screwed a couple of games up, but they could be undefeated. That's how they did not roll out of bed and have a bad game all year in that way.
That's right. I mean, the one bad game really was the Steelers game, I think, that we all remember there. But I'm guessing Aaron talked a little bit about there was a degree of vindication for the statistics in that, especially early in the year, Aaron's statistics kept saying the Ravens are the best team in the NFL. Ravens are the best team in the NFL. And they would cough up a Steelers game and they would have the drop passes or they would have like, whatever little mistake that wound up costing them a victory. And late in the year to go out there and steamroll the 49ers and steamroll the Dolphins and win these steamroll the Lions. It was vindication for what Aaron did. I think it's vindication for what this team had been building, in 21 and 2022 that fell apart because of injuries, and like both of those seasons, you see, Lamar Huntley finishing out the season and like rotating Dort running back and not having enough guys at receiver and injuries all over the defense. And it's like this Ravens team doesn't get it done. They're not a marquee franchise. They don't look like that anymore. And yet, if you looked at what they looked like when they were healthy and what they were trying to build when healthy, it was that team. It all fell apart. And this year, even with the injuries, it didn't fall apart, which is a vindication for Harbaugh. And I think I look at this team as a continuation of just the 2019 and 2020 team, where we're like, Lamar's the MVP or the MVP candidate. The team is one of the best in the league. They're up there with the Chiefs. And for 2 years, that got away from us. Now that's back. And this is just a continuation of that.
You know, we get back to balance in football and things
Yes.
that general managers try to do in the offseason. And I mean, they had a draft, and I'm sure I had you on after the draft 2 years ago, where they drafted a safety and a center in the first round. I mean,
Yeah.
football guys like you would say, that's ishy value. You don't want to do
Yes.
that. You know, like, how are you going to get the value out of that? And they wind up getting two basic Pro Bowl players that look like they're going to have to pay them both. And the paying them, we'll talk about that the day after the parade or the day after they disappoint everybody 2 weeks from now and get eliminated. But this is a sort of a once in a lifetime opportunity, given the money that they have in the Lamar, what they're going to have to do to franchise tag Matabike, what they've already spent on Roquan Smith, all good money spent, all of it,
Yes.
great money. But the Patrick Queen's going out the side door and the players are going to lose and all of that stuff. This is, they have a unique opportunity here the next couple of weeks. And when I'm writing my Dear Lamar letter next week to the franchise and to him saying, 19 was fine, and you freight trained everybody and lost, and we all said there'll be a next year, there'll be a next year. Then there wasn't because of injuries. This is a here and now issue for this team, and I thought all along they would have a hard time navigating, and Lamar and the franchise would have a hard time navigating going into Kansas City, into Buffalo, into Cincinnati in January, and winning two or three or some combination of that, Trevor Lawrence, whatever. Boy, home field, sitting home, quarterbacks out, you know, bad things happening. Buffalo shaky at best. Defensively, Kansas City fine. Offensively, can't catch the ball. They're all going to have to come in here.
Yep.
This is set up for the Ravens in a way that I wouldn't have envisioned it, because I didn't envision them being a one seed and taking a week off and having Burrow hurt. And all they've had a lot of good fortune, but more than that, the balance of the football team and the fact that their defense is better than their offense.
Defense is better than their offense, and the complementary football element of it is great, where that each one is complementing the other. The offense, if it doesn't get it done with a touchdown, gets a drive, gives the defense good field position. Defense doesn't necessarily get a touchdown stop, gets a field goal stop, gets the team in position to win the game. I'm in Philadelphia right now. The Eagles cannot play complementary football at all. Each side is letting the other side down regularly. I know you mentioned the free agency and everything down the road there. I think Hamilton and Lindebaum, that's another year down the road, isn't it?
No, but they're going to have to pay those guys. No. I'm just saying that they've drafted guys that they're going to have to give real market again and again. And they got into this back during giving up Sharper and Herring and all these guys they had to give up after the first Super Bowl. And then the second Super Bowl, same thing. I mean, Ray aged out, Ed Reed aged out, and they kind of fizzled because they gave Joe – I mean, the knock on Joe here, and you talk about Joe's star, you know, falling when he's the backup with the Jets and the Eagles and doing all that stuff in your own community. Billick would always say, he'd hold his ring at these things. Well, they say when you win a Super Bowl, they can never take it away from you, but they'll try. They'll try. You know, they'll try. Right. And the thing with Flacco, they'll try. And but the knock on Joe here on the streets always after he signed, what was, he's making so much money, they can't have good players around him. Right. We're not at that point here yet, but we will be, you know, that's going to be there. So to me, this is the here and now opportunity. And you would talk about eras, and the Ravens are going into an era where they're going to be the next three or four or five. He still runs into linebackers more than he should. And the injury thing, they are in a position where they must win the Super Bowl. There is a level of expectation here and disappointment that would happen if they fizzle out next week or the week after that, that I can't begin to tell you how big the bubble has gotten here, Mike. You know what I mean?
And that would stun everybody. That would stun national fans as well, because most of us have the Ravens reaching the Super Bowl or getting to the AFC Championship game against the Bills and going into a war or something like that. Fizzling out next week would be stunning for everybody along the way. But there's a little bit of – I never mind saying, well, this offseason's problems are worth worrying about. You know, what's happening a month from now with, you know, Odell or with some of these other guys, it's all worth worrying about. Next offseason, do not worry about that. Do not worry about that. Because when you can see the problem coming down the road, the team can do that as well. That's part of it. So they can look at these contracts 2 years down the road and make a plan.
Ronnie Stanley's not going to be a problem 2 years from now. He's not going to be on the cap, right? So, there's all of that. But the problem is Lamar taking up 21% of the cap. That's different from where – and that was the problem with the Ravens in 15, 16 – you know, during that period of time, they had a lot of money tied up in Joe. They did.
I don't know if it was ever 21%. They can't – they restructure now much more smartly, all teams do, than teams did about 11, 12 years ago. There were no void years. There was not a lot of simple restructure bonusing happening. That was kind of a new idea that teams were just starting to do. And also, again, we have a rising cap. You're saying, well, in 2 years, Lamar's going to be 21%. It could be 16% by the time that comes because of the way the cap rises. And then you can do a restructure, and it's 14%. It's like, okay, we're just like every other team has got a big quarterback now. How are we going to do this?
But Joe's career is different if Rashad Perryman works out, right? If, you know, if the guys that they drafted became Kyle Hamilton and Tyler Lindbergh, you know, that was part of the other issue after that, is they were not getting blue chip players in the 20s drafting. They weren't drafting Ed Reed anymore. And I find this team to be a fascinating put together. I'm not talking to Eric DaCosta anymore. He helped me write Purple Rain 2. I'm not writing a Purple Rain 3, even if they win. Just full disclosure for everybody out of there. But if I were writing Purple Rain 3, the structure of putting this team together and
Uh-huh.
where we were 12 months ago with Lamar in limbo, not showing up in Cincinnati to even be supportive.
Right.
Like all of that went on, they what Eric DaCosta has done with Roquan Smith, which a lot of teams don't make that kind of move and lay that kind of lead and that kind of money out and just say, we want that guy for the next 5 years in the middle of the season.
Right.
So they have done some unbelievably unorthodox things, but Kyle Van Noy, Clowney, just unbelievable identification of football players for their system.
Yeah, identification on that side where you're getting value from like the free agent market and the trade market from some older players, using them in support of a nucleus that you did draft. And that's a very good and powerful 1-2 punch. And it does give you long range options because you can shed some of those veterans. And usually there's another veteran out there. Again, you're not bringing a veteran to be your savior. You're bringing a veteran in to be a support character from these other guys rising up. And that is something that the Ravens are doing very well now. And I think they really were trying to do that in 2021, 2022. You saw all the old receivers that came moving in here, but it was usually to bail a boat out because there were so many injuries. And because, yeah, the infrastructure of their roster wasn't as strong as it is right now because of that 2021, I guess, no, 2022 draft.
Well, Calais Campbell would have been nice on this team, and I saw him walking off the
Sure.
field for the last time in Atlanta last week. And I'm thinking, you know, I thought they could have used him. And then Matt Ebike, and they give him Pierce money this week. But more than that, these spare parts, the Van Noys and the Clownies that came in and produced
Right.
and are still producing and will be a huge part of Purple Rain 3 if they win a Super Bowl a couple weeks from now. Because we talk about Lamar and we put all that Lamar, and it dazzles the eyes. But the defense is the reason this team is where it is right now. I mean, without that, they would be a very unbalanced operation. And you speak of that in Philadelphia. Mike Denier is here, the run and shoot gang. Tell me what you're doing. Give me the professional story for you so people can find your wisdom out there.
You can find me at The Messenger, themessenger.com. It is your source for not just sports, not just the NFL, but news, politics, business, tech, entertainment. It's basically a newspaper, but it's on the internet and it's free. So check me out at themessenger.com. I'm still affiliated with a Aaron Schatz. We have a podcast we do on Monday and Thursday out of the FTN network, which is where Aaron is now. But my main gig is The Messenger.
All right, so on your podcast, what are you saying about these teams and this collection of teams? I think we're all in agreement the Ravens and the 49ers are chalky here. And probably on their own side, the 49ers are more chalky. You know, if I have to pick
Yes.
one or the other to absolutely make it, the 49ers, the NFC looks to be a disaster in a lot of ways. And you're sitting in Philadelphia right now. But it does concern me when teams have talent like Philadelphia, like Buffalo, like Kansas City, where you look at these teams and say, I believed in him in September. I believed in him in October. I believed in him when the boat hit the rocks in November. I mean, it's like looking at the Ravens and saying, well, Cleveland and Pittsburgh, you know, piss on that. Cleveland beat the Ravens. Pittsburgh beat them twice. So if you see
Yes.
them next weekend, you're looking at it and saying, well, I'd rather see Miami. You know,
Right.
and on in the NFC, I still think like I think Philadelphia's going to go down and figure out how to beat Tampa because like I think there is a little pedigree, even though it hasn't been good lately. I think they have good football players. I believe that.
Yes.
December 5th, I believe that the Philadelphia Eagles had the talent to win the NFC.
Yes.
I believe the Lions might have the talent to win the NFC, but going out and actually doing it, but there's going to be a shocker. Some Joe Flacco or some, there's going to be a Blake Bortles in here somewhere this year. So, somebody's going to shock the world.
There might be, and I think for a Buffalo Ravens fan, I mean, sorry, Baltimore Ravens fan, yeah, you want to see even Mahomes, but Miami or Kansas City coming out of a negative 10 degree day or whatever that's going to be, having beaten up each other, having frozen to death, come into Baltimore. That's what you're going to want to see. You don't necessarily want to see a division foe who comes in who has all this history against you and a Flacco quote unquote revenge game or Tomlin out there trying to prove some kind of point and trying to jam the ball down your throat. Although with Watt out, that makes them a little bit weaker. I think you want to see one of those big offensive teams because especially the Dolphins, you crushed them a couple weeks ago. Here in Philadelphia, the whole issue is this team is completely demoralized. It's like if there was a morale slider that could go from 0 to 100, it's at 0 right now. And this is every little problem that snowballed, they have not been able to solve the problem. And I think it's gotten in the collective heads of these players.
My God, you get on a plane, you get out of Tampa on Monday night, and you're going to have 71 degrees. You know, you're a better team, you go win, and then all of a sudden, You're on the plane to San Francisco, and you go
But
out there and you give them hell, and you feel, and the morale changes dramatically next
yes.
Tuesday if they land in Philadelphia and they're in the second round of the playoffs, like they should be, like where you thought they were going to be, and now they're going to go have to go on the road, which you probably knew they were going to have to go through San Francisco anyway, and then you go out there and take your chances. But I think that for all of these teams, that I mean, expectations are high in Detroit, right? Because they haven't had it. Cleveland, first time in. Cleveland's going to win this. I believe your guy Joe is going to. My guy Joe is. I'm a believer in what Cleveland has done. That they're going to pack their defense, and if they have to come in here next week and see Lamar, they're not going to be a yellow puddle between Joe Flacco's
No.
legs at all. And certainly Jimmy Schwartz has pieces to match up to try to take the ball away once or twice and win some weird 21-17 game, right?
What's very frustrating about playing the Browns is, particularly on defense, each of their corners can match up with your receivers, done, done, done. And Myles Garrett is going to get wins against your defense, offensive line, no matter how good it is, whether it's Stanley or McCary or whoever. Done, done, done. And you're like, how do we solve the problem that they can just play the most base playground defense against us and win? That's the frustration that you face whenever you face the Browns. So the best way to try and beat the Browns is, is to manufacture some offense and hope that you get the back to earth game from Flacco. And like, we all keep waiting for the back to earth game to Flacco. I do think it's happening. I look at like the overall offense around him. The offensive line is depleted. They don't have Nick Chubb. They don't have a lot of wide receivers besides Amari Cooper. Even independent of what Flacco is capable of, that offense looks like it's ready to fall in among itself. That's kind of your best bet against the Browns. Because if they're doing this thing where Joe's throwing for 300 yards and three touchdowns, even if it's just three bombs and that's the three touchdowns, you're in deep trouble against that defense.
Mike Denier is here, the run and shoot gangster, out on the messenger, out on social media, up in the fighting city of Philadelphia, but even the tougher side. He went over to the Jersey side where Rocky retired before we heard from him at the end. Bills and Chiefs and the whatever threat that they pose here 2 weeks from now, if the Ravens get through Pittsburgh, Cleveland, whoever it is. You mentioned Kansas City coming. Kansas City and Buffalo, the Ravens only have to get one of them.
Yes, yes.
And at home. Boy, that is so different than any way I ever thought about it the last 3 or 4 years, that this pathway is different. Kansas City, Buffalo, in that game in Buffalo, if that's where it winds up this week, or next week, I should say. Thoughts about that thing and where Buffalo has been and where they're going. I still think I would hate to see Kansas City in here. You know, I Buffalo, I take my chances on this defense here, forcing turnovers and finding a way to win, that the defense would match up better. Kansas City worries me because Kansas City's always been a problem here.
Kansas City has always been a problem, but my God, that offense, that receiving core makes things so much easier. You're basically saying, limit the Mahomes stuff. Not stop the Mahomes stuff, limit the Mahomes stuff. He makes two miracle plays. That's 14 points, win 21 to 14. It is very different from when you had to worry about Tyreek Hill or even Juju Smith-Schuster or even competent receivers. You're dealing with a bunch of people you don't know are going to line up. So that's the one end of the things. The Bills were in the process of tripping over their own feet at about 10:30 Sunday night. They were down 14-7. They were making mistakes. They were committing turnovers. And a dude gets a punt return touchdown. And now we're talking about this unstoppable juggernaut that is the Bills. They were tripping over their own feet against the Patriots. They were tripping over their own feet against the Chargers. Those are horrible opponents. They come back and win both games, or they take control of those games enough to do it. They're not as good as all that. They're scary because they keep winning. They're scary because they have some recent wins. They're scary because Josh Allen, when he's at, just looks like Superman out there at times when he's not throwing the ball right to a defender. But I don't think, I mean, if you're saying who matches up to the Ravens better, the answer might be the Browns, for the reasons you said earlier. These teams come in, it's just a matter of they're very strong teams. They have very good pedigrees. If the Ravens play their regular game, if they're at their regular established level, they're going to beat both of these teams unless somebody goes into lights out mode.
Well, it is weird this weekend watching the Browns with Flacco run around, my buddy Schwartz. It's very hard for me to root against guys that I consider to be family in some way.
Yeah.
But the notion that they're going to win, or they'll win early, and then we sit here and watch the other games,
Yeah.
and you know, Miami slapping around, Pittsburgh slapping. But if they win, we get them instead of the Browns, and we'd say good, bad, and different. I don't know. I think the Browns are the worst matchup. I think out of this weekend, the thing you'd rather see Pittsburgh or Miami if you're the Ravens, and knowing Kansas City and Buffalo are waiting around the corner, I think Cleveland's the worst matchup for the Ravens next week.
They're
And
the
if you're
worst.
sitting around rooting for Joe to win and Joe does win on Saturday and they're waiting, that's the nightmare scenario for the Ravens. So I don't think it's a good fight for them. I mean, I think it's a real close game and a real dog fight for them if the Browns come in. And I think the Browns fans come in here and make it really ishy.
That's true. The Browns fans can get there really quickly. The Browns might be the worst matchup. And of course, there's mojo in place with Flacco's coming back in. That's going to get in fans' minds. It's not going to get in any players' minds. It's going to get in fans' minds. But they're the worst matchups. The only really bad matchup at all for the Ravens is the 49ers.
Well, and that happens in Las Vegas. Luke will be in Las Vegas covering the Super Bowl. I will be doing the Crab Cake Row beginning February 5th, brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation, 866-90 Nation, as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare. As we take this thing through January. Crab Cake Tour's in a little bit of a hiatus here this month while we celebrate Purple Festivus and shovel our lawns and our driveways. But we are going to do this on February 5th all week long. So make sure you're making plans if you're not going to Vegas to come out and join us. Mike, I hope to get you for a crab cake. Some point, I will not see you at the Super Bowl, but I love having you on, love following your work. And at some point, you and I will gather at the Mann Music Center high on a hill overlooking the Schuylkill and watch some rock and roll one night. I promise. All right.
High on the hill. Absolutely.
You got it. Mike Denier joining us here, the Run and Shoot Gangster. He's out at the Messenger. I'm out at BaltimorePositive.com. Luke is out at Owings Mills covering all things Ravens. Any breaking news happens first on the WNST Tech Service. If you're on that, you get it nice and early. Rest up, everyone. It's a bye weekend when we watch six football games this weekend, but we're still alive next week. Back for more on Baltimore Positive right after this.